We're reading about the stages of relationship. So we finished the introduction to my book, Loving Conflict. I'm going to be reading to you today from chapter one, The Stages of Relationship. This is a book in two sections, and I'm going to be starting section one. So the first section of the book is called Tired of Having the Same Old Argument. That was originally going to be the title of the book, but it turned out that first half of the book is really about how to fix the problem of doing conflict inside of relationship. But that's not all I have to say, and that's not the only use of the teamwork mediation process, or even the best. So the second half of the book is about how to use these skills once you've learned how to resolve conflict using embodied NVC and the teamwork mediation method. And so the second half of the book is called The Return of Effortless Love. And that's four chapters about how to use this skill set to make your relationship better and better and better, which there aren't that many books about because our culture doesn't actually know how to do mature relationships. Basically, they get to the point where they finally kiss, and then they say, and they lived happily ever after. And that's really all our culture knows about that second half. So we're in the first half of the book, Tired of Having the Same Old Argument. Section one describes our understanding of how your mindset locks you into conflict and what you can do about it. Section two describes how to use these same skills after the war is over to create a mature relationship and return to effortless love. So the first chapter here that I'm going to be reading from today is called The Stages of a Relationship. And this is an important piece of background for you to understand how we're thinking about relationship, how we see relationship. So essentially, to understand how conflict could possibly lead to deeper intimacy, let's look at relationships from a teamwork perspective. We see marriage as a three-stage process. Stage one, the infatuation stage, also called NRE, new relationship energy in some communities. Stage two is the difference stage, unfortunately more often experienced as the conflict stage. And stage three, the mature relationship. In this chapter, we'll examine how these three distinct stages either create a relationship that is deeply satisfying to both of you, or how by missing a few key skills, these stages can actually be responsible for all those same old arguments. So in watching my own relationship and the relationships that I've been mediating for 15 years, I noticed that what was causing people to go into conflict was that when the infatuation stage ends, because they don't understand what the infatuation stage is really about. In this culture, we just think it's just chemicals and sex, and that it's a fairy tale, and eventually it ends, and then the real relationship starts. But I have a deeper understanding of it from the perspective of embodied NVC, and so I'd like to describe that to you so you can understand how you got to where you are and what we can do about it. So stage one, infatuation, also known in my parlance as the real life sampler. And I read from Loving Conflict. Most people have heard about the infatuation stage of relationship. Most people assume the reason it feels so good is because of the newness and the physical attraction. This can't be denied, but something else characterizes this stage for us as mediators. In addition to sex, both partners experience the full range of their deepest, often hidden needs being consistently met by the other person. We believe this is what makes the decision to commit so appealing. So those of you who either know my work or have been listening to these online chats so far will understand that essentially, I look at everything from a needs perspective, a universal human needs perspective. Are your needs getting met, or are they being left unmet? And from that perspective, the infatuation period is characterized by both parties consistently getting really important needs of theirs met. The word consistent is also really important, and we'll get more into that in the next piece, but this is not just about a momentary getting your needs met. What's called the infatuation stage is really you're consistently getting these really important needs of yours met that go unmet when you're alone. Another important distinction in our parlance. Reading on, couples tend to devalue this stage because it eventually ends, and since they don't know how to revive it, they assume it's just an illusion. But we don't have such intense feelings about just anyone. We see the infatuation stage as a real-life sampler of the potential for lifelong satisfaction with this particular partner. Now, that's important. Infatuation stages feel so great that we tend to think of them as just the same thing with everyone, but that's not how I experience them as a needs-based mediator. As far as I'm concerned, this is a real-life sampler of what you can get with this particular person, that essentially what we think of the infatuation stage is this is an opportunity for you to try out what this relationship could be like if both of you were full out open with this particular person. You're getting to feel, to sort of try before you buy, of what the mature relationship, the lifelong relationship, could be with this particular person. During the infatuation stage, you get to experience everything you can have with this particular person. You experience what their real life capacity is to meet your needs. And you get all this without even having to ask. That's an important question and kind of a trick that I put in there. You'll see what that means in a little bit. This real life sampler is a chance to actually feel what you and this person can create when the two of you are giving generously of your gifts and receiving as openly as you can. Essentially, that's how you do mature relationship. You give generously and you receive openly. Of course, there are things that are going to be getting in the way of that, that you won't feel like you're completely in control of. And we'll be talking about how you can manage to handle that. This is one of the reasons we are confident that you are likely with the right person. There are a lot of people who believe when they come in to see us that the problem is they chose the wrong person. I'm inclined to believe that although this may not be the person you need to be with for the rest of your life, that this is the right person for you right now. And the way I believe I know that is if you picked them freely and if you are having an infatuation period with them in the beginning, that that's an indication that they have skills to meet needs of yours that have consistently gone unmet. And so we believe the problem to be dealt with is not whether or not you have the right person, but how to get the benefit of this person and their particular differences from you. You sample the actual potential of the relationship, and as a result of that informed, though admittedly chemically enhanced and unconscious decision, you proceeded with the relationship. You might believe that you chose this person by making a thoughtful, conscious choice based on their skills, their background, or money, or feelings of love, or whether they wanted to raise children the way you do, or religious beliefs, or moral values, or lifestyle, etc., etc. Some or even most of these factors and a myriad of others may have been important in your choice of partner, but we contend that people select the person they eventually decide to commit to and marry based on two key factors: the satisfaction of having your needs met by this other person, especially the ones that went unsatisfied when you were alone, and the satisfaction that you feel in meeting their needs. Another really important piece. Marshall says we are hardwired to enjoy meeting other people's needs. And so finding someone not only who meets your needs, but who you enjoy meeting their needs, we believe is an important part of the magic of a love match, that both the give and the take are a match. this section called Relationships Are About Difference. In an episode of the TV show Seinfeld, the character Jerry falls in love with a woman because she orders cold cereal for dinner in a restaurant, something he'd never seen anyone do but himself. The next day, he tells his friend George, "I finally found what I've been looking for all along. It's me." But by week's end, the two of them are so bored with each other, they don't even bother to break up. You are not looking for you. You already have you. Relationships are a lot of work, and there's no point in doing all that work just to get another you. So it stands to reason that you are going to be inviting difference into your life. The trick is to learn how to get the benefit of those differences, because you either get that or you get the opposite, conflict. This is the core piece of information about why we believe mediation is the right technology for doing relationship stuff. Relationships are about difference. We're talking here about intimate relationships, but the truth is all relationships are about difference. I mean, identical twins are different from each other. You didn't marry your twin. You're picking someone because of a particular difference they have, of being able to meet needs of theirs and needs of yours that you weren't able to get met on your own. Differences are part of the bedrock of intimate relationships. To a large extent, differences are what attract people to one another. Not just any difference, but the particular set of differences that each person requires to complete themselves. That's because the psyche is designed to desire the satisfaction of all universal human needs. Not just the half that each of you has been focusing on up until now. So when you invite that special someone in, what you're really inviting in is access to the benefit of the full range of human needs. This is the bedrock of our philosophy. That if, in fact, it is needs that motivate you to do everything you do and say everything that you say, then it must also be true that that same motivation is what's causing you to pick partners. And it makes perfect sense. If you look at the people you have picked, or if that's too hard to do, look at people around you who have picked partners, you'll notice that they have complementary sets of needs, that accountants don't tend to marry other accountants, although I know some who have. Accountants tend to marry ballet dancers. Why? Because accountants are really good at doing the work of everyday life, but spontaneity is not part of that skill set. And although our conscious mind enjoys being successful at the things we're good at, our psyche wants us to have the benefit of the full range of life. And so we tend to draw people into us who are good at the things, particularly the needs, satisfying the needs that we're not good at satisfying. And that way you get the benefit. Of course, you also are now moving in with somebody who's really different than you. And since in this culture we don't know how to deal with difference, there's the rub. When the newness wears off, however, these same differences start to create challenges, because we don't understand that the benefits that we're experiencing were the result of those differences. It starts to seem like the problem was our choice of partner. People often give up on their first marriage believing that the problem was their conscious choice of partner. 50% of first marriages, I think that number's actually gone up, end in divorce after an average of 7.5 years. If their choice of partner was in fact the reason, they should be able to learn from their mistake and choose more wisely the next time. But what we see instead, statistically, is that second marriages fail 75% of the time and in an average of only 2 years. Kind of belies the idea that all you have to do is figure out what you did wrong in the first one and you'll do it better. And third marriages fail more often and sooner. Clearly something else is going on here. If what ends people's first marriages is their inability to benefit from the differences that drew them to one another, then the next person they, quote, choose may look really different, but they will likely quickly stir up the same issues because they are being chosen by the same criteria, their capacity to satisfy specific needs of ours. That is their difference from us, and that's their benefit. That's why second marriages end so quickly. People see the pattern repeating sooner and say to themselves, oh no, I'm not doing that again, and leave because they still believe the problem was they chose the wrong person. But you're going to use the same criteria to choose the next, according to us. Here's an example of how unconscious this process is. One of our clients was a scientist, very linear and reasoned in all of his decisions. His first marriage ended in a nightmare of a divorce, and so he not only decided that he would never marry again, he decided to guarantee he wouldn't have any chance of meeting anyone. So he took a job on an oil rig in the North Sea above the Arctic Circle. There would only be 35 people on this whole little continent, socked in by ice for 10 months out of the year. Sounds pretty safe, doesn't it? As a conscious decision for keeping yourself out of the relationship pool? Yeah, well, what if it's not your conscious mind keeping you out? However, one of the 34 other people was a nurse who was far more impulsive and much more emotional than our scientist. She too was fed up with relationships and had joined the crew with the same idea of isolating herself from the dating scene. Her unconscious is so tricky. As you've probably guessed, they fell in love and were married shortly after returning to the mainland. But in less than a year, they came to us for help because the exact same patterns of conflict they each had been trying to avoid from their previous relationships had found them in the middle of a frozen sea 1,000 miles from home. You can freeze out humanity, but you can't freeze out your universal human needs. True story. In our relationship, Elise loves beauty and form, while I'm more of a function guy. For the first 2 years, we argued over which approach was more important. Once we'd become mediators and learned about needs, we stopped having that argument. That argument, by the way, is the second stage of relationship, arguing about which of your differences is right, and therefore which one is wrong. Once we became mediators and had learned about needs, we stopped having that argument and began to benefit from the satisfaction of both ways of living. Now we live in a beautifully decorated 100-year-old house, which meets her need for form and beauty, with all of its systems in fine working order, which meets my need for function. Instead of either or, teamwork mediation helps couples find the both and solution. If you find yourself in an either or argument, you need to switch to both and. The likely cause of your most intense conflicts is not that you chose the wrong person or that there is something wrong with your partner. You are uncomfortable because your partner is so different than you. Ironically, you chose those very differences because you need them to fully experience life. Since difference is the reason you chose this particular person, and that has now become the reason of your difficulties, you can understand the futility of your attempts to solve each problem at the surface of every argument. Your relationship doesn't have a problem. What it has is unrealized potential. I love the positivity that universal human needs takes to a situation that looks so tough, but actually is a benefit. A deep understanding of needs is key to having a successful relationship. This includes how to identify your needs and your partner's needs, how to communicate them, how to negotiate them, and negotiate your differences. Not knowing about needs, especially about the difference between your needs and those of your partners, will block your ability to build intimacy. We believe this is what causes conflict in relationship. Not understanding that needs are what's motivating you and that this difference has benefit. The benefit of difference. There are differences you choose because your psyche wants you to experience the whole range of universal human needs. Take a second to experience what that means, what that feels like. If you're in relationship, you no doubt have some judgments about how your partner is different than you. And most people come to us with what I call plan A. Plan A is for them to explain to me what's wrong with their partner, how they're doing things wrong, and to get me to team up with them so that we can change their partner. Plan A is change my partner to be, this isn't spoken, but to be more like me. You don't want them to be more like you. You already have you. What you need to do is to learn how to get the benefit of the difference of who they are. They're not doing that to annoy you. It does seem that way sometimes, but they are not being that way just to annoy you or to be contrary. They actually want things to happen the way they want them to because that meets their set of needs. Now, since the set of needs that they're good at, you're not good at, it may be hard for you to understand why anybody would want to do things that way, because although you have that universal human need and a part of you is desiring to get that need met, because you've been leaving that need unsatisfied for decades, you've lost touch with the value of it. And in fact, in order to make yourself feel better about things, what you've probably done is gone into judgment about that need. So for instance, we had a couple who, she was a business person and he was an artist. That's a likely matchup, right? He's got the spontaneity and the appreciation of beauty and she's practical and she can kind of get things done. And he was the man. And so traditionally he can be expected in traditional society to be the one who's bringing in the income, but she had a much greater capacity for bringing in income. And in the beginning, she was fine supporting his artistic endeavors. She was loving him and giving freely and receiving freely. And over time, she began to get frustrated with his laziness and his no good friends, who were also artists who would come over and they'd have parties and they'd do art stuff together, but they weren't adding to the coffers of their house. And so she went into judgment of the very qualities of life, the needs for spontaneity and artistic and connection. She didn't have that many friends. She went into judgment about those things. Well, they're not of value. You're not bringing in any of the butter. And she had a lot of judgments about him and he had a lot of guilt. But when we got down to the need-based level, what it turned out was she was really envious of him having friends and having this life of ease and freedom and creativity, that she had a huge value for that, even though she was in judgment of it, because she couldn't figure out how to get those needs met in herself. So she brought that in the form of a beautiful artist, who she then started to plan A to try to turn him into more of a breadwinner. And that's a classic example of how this dynamic works. We bring the person in that we need, who has the difference that we need, and we set them out trying to change them to get rid of that difference. And the funny thing that I've figured out watching couples do this is it's fortunate that you can't change them, because if you did change them, then you'd have two corporate people, you wouldn't be interested in them anymore, and you'd break up with them. But if it was really possible to be able to change the person to be more like you, then both parties would be doing plan A. And if they were both successful, they would just switch places, which I think is hilarious. But it's not possible. You can't change the other person. They are who they are, and you need them to be that way. So in finishing up our half hour here, I like to end by giving you a little assignment. So, if you are in a relationship, I'd like for you to think about judgments that you have about your partner's difference from you. If you're not in a relationship and have been in the past, think about a previous relationship, maybe the reason you ended a previous relationship or they did. Think about the difference that you had and the judgments that you had of them. And turn those judgments around and see if you can see what it is about the thing about them that you're judging that you actually need. So notice the difference between you and your partner and see if, in fact, the very things that are annoying about them are things that you actually have a desire to have more of in your life, and that the reason that you're judging them maybe is more envy than it is actual judgment. So you can get this book. Go to Amazon.com and look up Loving Conflict, and you can order it there. You can also go to themarriagemediator.net and make an appointment to actually do this work with me if you'd like. Have fun discovering the value of the difference in your relationship. We're going to start talking about the difference stage, how you can actually use this set of skill set to get the benefit of the difference stage, and why sometimes, so many times, it turns out looking like the conflict stage again. So, this is Max Rivers, the teamwork marriage mediator, wishing you a fun and different kind of weekend. Bye bye.